evening, and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content by and for queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and tonight I'm in the studio with Atlas Kleinman, who's currently a high school student in Colorado. Through his participation in KGNU's Media Gardens program, which partners with a variety of organizations to empower youth voices, Atlas recently created a compendium of poems that he wrote reflecting on his ideas of the future, relationships, and gender through the lens of trans and queer identities. Atlas, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Of course, I had nothing else to do.
Would you mind just starting out with an introduction in terms of what you think you'd like listeners to know about you? Feel free to share any parts of who you are that feel relevant and meaningful to you right now.
Okay. My name is Atlas. I use he, him pronouns. I am a child. I write poems and novels as well. I love reading and writing, and I have a cat, and she is objectively the best cat in the world.
So I want to talk a little bit about your poetry, the compendium of poems, which came out. You wrote those in September?
Yes. Yeah, I recorded it in September or October, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, it seemed like, was exploring kind of notions, ideas of queerness.
Yes.
I mean, can you just let me know, to me, queer is a term that is, it means, you know, has different meanings for different mm-hmm. people. There's a lot of history to that term.
Yes.
For you, how are you understanding queer?
Okay. How do I understand queer? I think that my understanding of that term has changed a lot over time. When I was younger, and I first heard the word, it was a shocking new addition to LGBT. Which I had learned about in fourth grade because my friend sat me down and said, "Do you know what a lesbian is?" And I said, "I do not." And she very kindly told me. But I think that now I sort of think of being queer and being gay as things like that can overlap, but they don't have to be the same. I think that there are some gay people or LGBTQIA plus human beings who identify with labels under that acronym or queer. However, to me, queer, the label, like with a capital Q, is more about the history and the community and the culture, which is generally a bit rebellious and anti-status quo. And I would say it's very It's something that encompasses sort of everything that isn't how people want you to be in generally a sense of gender. And it could be argued that things like lesbianism and being a gay man are also gender nonconforming, which I could talk about, but I'm not going to. I think queer is kind of whatever you make it, but in a similar way, I think there are some people that misuse it.
So for you, that's how you kind of engage it in this, like, against the status quo. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
What about just your experience writing poems? I mean, have you been doing this for a long time?
Yes.
How did you come to poetry?
Well, I don't know what my first poem was. I know that I've recently taken to reading my old journals and my old notebooks from when I was like 6 and 7, and I was writing poems then, and they were atrocious. No hate to my former, a little bit of hate to my former self. A healthy amount of hate. I think I started because I liked reading. I've always loved reading. And I started to write. And I took writing lessons with someone who was lovely. And then it just kind of spiraled out of control. And now I am a fiend.
Poetry fiend.
A poetry fiend.
So what is that? So you've got a notebook on you at all times.
Yes.
You're ready to wax poetic about what's happening in your
mm-hmm.
life.
Indeed. I think that that could be just a side effect of the way that my brain is wired, because I have always, people sometimes make fun of me for speaking oddly. I had this teacher who didn't believe that I say the word indeed in casual conversation. Because he was joking about it. I was like, "I say indeed all the time." He was like, "No, you don't." And I was like, "Yes, I do." But yes, waxing poetic is one of my favorite things to do. It's very obnoxious to everyone.
Do you think there's a kind of relationship between writing poetry and queerness for you?
Yes.
Like, what is that relationship?
I think that modern poetry, in the way that it functions, often without a rhyme scheme or like an iambic meter, though iams are quite fun. I think that that sort of is similar to queerness in some ways, because I personally have heard lots of people say the fun thing about poetry is that there's no rules, which isn't always true. You can have a bad poem. I am a believer of good and bad art, but that's different. But I think that being queer, as with most things, sort of gives people a different perspective on life and on relationships and art in general. And I think that that can influence being queer. And it's also, poetry is an art form where nobody has to see it. And even if they do see it, they might not get it, which is cool.
That's part of it, right?
Yeah. Yes.
How the audience kind of receives that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you found that poetry has led you to, because you're talking about how it extends understanding for other people in an audience, but what about for you? Like, have you found yourself writing poetry and then come to different kinds of realizations about your own identity or queerness or gender and sexuality through that?
Yeah, I think so. Probably. I identify as a trans man or boy or thing. Not thing. Well, it depends. But I think that identity is much more complex. I also identify as non-binary, because that's just how I am. But I use strictly he, him. And I don't know. I think my identity is very complicated and nuanced, and more so than people expect it to be. And by people, I mean just like the general populace, if you will.
So in some ways, poetry has a kind of maybe a spaciousness or an allowance for you to kind of move into that.
I think so. It lets me misspell words when is necessary, and it lets me do weird things with commas and periods.
And I'm curious about, you kind of briefly mentioned artists.
Yes.
Do you have people that are kind of your, I don't know, that you hold close to you as sort of like people that serve as inspiration or things like that?
Okay. I'm so glad you asked me about this, because I love talking about gay people. I think this is probably just a coincidence, but all of my biggest queer inspirations have been lesbians. I think that people like Audre Lorde and Jeanette Winterson have been really influential, especially Jeanette Winterson on my writing. I think that her use of how she constructs sentences is very impactful to me, and I don't really know how to say that in any other way. I think, let's see, other creatives. I really liked Andrew Joseph White's book, Hell Followed With Us. It's one of my favorite books. I thought it was just a very lovely encapsulation of being a trans man, and being just genderqueer in general, and just like the rage that comes with it, but also the fear of that rage. And in that book, that anger is sort of personified as a evangelical doomsday device that is implanted in a young boy. It's fantastic. I don't know. I think queerness in itself tends to breed art.
They go together.
They do.
So I'm curious about, like, for me, it's like, we can read queerly.
Yeah.
But we can also, I'm drawn to how you described, you know, that work is like unintelligible. Like, you know, things don't have to be easily legible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of maybe the journey or what queerness can do in art. And that, you know, there are ways to, for a kind of culmination or a way to make sense. But the need to always make sense to everyone or to an audience, kind of pushing against that a little, maybe?
Yeah, I think that the idea of, I forgot one of my favorite lesbians. I don't know if she's a lesbian, but everyone should go read Tamsin Muir's book, Gideon the Ninth. It is my favorite book in the entire world. Yeah, I think that the idea that your art needs to make sense is poison. It's good if, I think when I say making sense, I mean in the traditional way, but as long as art has themes, I feel like it's valid. There are wrong ways to do art, in the way that if you do it like really insincerely, or you do it like insensitively, you know, but I think that as long as you have some idea of what you're doing and what you're feeling while you're doing it, I think that that is good. And I think that some of the best writing and movies and, you know, whatever have come out of that.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about artists that you draw from. I'm curious about other art, though. I mean, in your compendium, you talked about getting inspiration for a poem from a song.
There's so much potential in music for queer reading. In a similar way to poetry, I think that, like, instrumentals and vocalization can allow for some exploration of identity, especially queer identity, in a way that other forms do not or cannot or don't want to.
I mean, is there a song or two that you just feel consistently drawn to in that sense?
Yeah. Okay, this is actually why I made this place. I have a playlist called Atlas's Gender. And it's
a gender playlist.
I do. Okay, so I Know the End by Phoebe Bridgers. The last 30 seconds where she's screaming. I love it. Let's see. There is Acolyte by Slaughter Beach Dog. I really love. Okay. So there's this artist called Juno Lev, and I love their stuff very much. They do, and Kevin Atwater, he does this too. My favorite thing in the entire world, which is probably why Hell Followed With is one of my favorite books, is another one of my like really big interests is the history of Christianity. I love it when people put queerness and Christianity together in art. I think it is the best thing in the entire world. So Juno Lev does that a lot. They have a song called Jesus Freak.
So some of this music is kind of like, whether it's the screen, the raw emotion and kind of permission to feel that alongside Phoebe Bridgers, for example.
Yes. I also love Penelope Scott. I do not know if she's queer. I like her stuff. She was very influential to me a couple years ago, and still, I think that her first album on Spotify is one of her best albums.
But, you know, what is it about that album that unlocked something for you?
It's acoustic. The singing is not entirely refined. It's about being sad a lot, which I think a lot of queer people can relate to. I think all people. I think that just the lyrics, the way that it's sung, is very gentle but intense, which I like a lot.
Here's the thing, I can't do anything right. Try as I absolutely, totally might. The bones are melting, the skeleton is ash. The clavicle detaches and falls with a deafening crash. Protagonist, I'm not even my own. I don't know anything. I don't even know what I don't know. And if you look outside, you'll see disintegrating trees. The artificial way the sunlight bounces off the waxy leaves. My heart catches on every thorn. You're already halfway out the door. And I've never looked so old, and I have never been so cold. And it is 85 degrees.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and I'm talking with Atlas Kleinman, a high school student who recently created a compendium of poems through the Media Gardens program with KGNU. So we've been talking a lot about art.
Indeed.
Poetry, music. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about some of the other themes that have come up in some of the poems that were in the compendium that you shared. You mentioned friendships, the importance of queer relationships.
Yes.
I wonder what, like, building queer community means to you.
That's a hard question. I want to answer it. I don't know. I think it's about being honest with people. Let's see. I mean, I'm at a new school this year, and how I made my first gay friend was they were wearing an entire outfit made of the non-binary flag, which was honestly impressive. So I walked up to them and I said, are you cisgender? You look cisgender. And their birthday party is on Saturday. So, but basically, I think queer community is just about being honest. It's about love, which is really cliche, and love not even in like a friend love way, just like love as in like mutual aid and reciprocity and being nice to people. There are some gay people or LGBT people that are really mean to other queer people, you know, and I think that's not the point of anything. The point is nice, is to be nice and to have friends and to make cookies and to dance and sing and sleep and have a cat. And I kind of really truly believe that. And I think that infighting makes it worse. Of course, there are times when discussion and, you know, argument, quote unquote, is needed. But just... like, even, I think there's a lot of hatred towards people, especially with genders that are seen as odd, because people see non-binary as a third gender when it's really not. It's like the biggest umbrella term in the entire world. It just means an experience of gender that is at least partially, that just isn't male or female. I mean, Leslie Feinberg said that transgender should, like, include just anyone that doesn't really fit into the gender mold. And, you know, whether or not you agree with that, I think that it's an interesting point to think about. I don't know. I think queer community is about vulnerability and supporting each other. And pride, honestly. I think that people often try to dampen pride. I think the phrase, or not, I guess it's not a phrase, like the idea, like, don't make being gay your whole personality is really toxic. Because first of all, I have like hobbies, like I do things. I go to school, I eat dinner, I have a cat. But I mean, even if I didn't, it's okay if being gay is your whole personality, because queerness impacts every single part of your life and how you see the world, whether or not you realize it. And so, of course, it's going to be a big part of your personality. So, yeah, I think queer community is just about honesty and support.
It does seem like something that has been an ongoing question, like, over decades, of what does it mean to have care and support
mm-hmm.
in queer communities.
Mm-hmm.
It's an open question, right? I think we're constantly trying to figure it out, and even acknowledging things like, you know, whitewashing of the community, or, you know, different issues that are at play.
Mm-hmm.
What does it really mean to care for and support one another?
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
You mentioned like visibility,
mm-hmm.
honesty, understanding, some of these things as being really key to kind of, you know, essentially queer representation.
Yeah.
How do you try to engage that in your work?
Okay. I find myself having to tell you that it is impossible for me to write anything that is not queer. Okay. There is a certain point, even when I'm reading books, where if it doesn't get gay, I put it down. This is just because of the way I am. You know, I once got like 200 pages into this book thinking that it was gay. And then I was like, oh, well, the girls haven't kissed, so I'm out. I think that because of how influential being queer is on a person's life, I think that it's hard to not make that part of your art. But with that, that can get shut down. And that can get heavily, heavily censored. And I think that, honestly, you just keep trying. Find people that want to listen to you and want to talk about art with you. You know, I mean, they don't have to be like the big five publishers. Especially not HarperCollins, because their workers are doing a strike right now. But, you know, that can be like some guy you know who lives on the road and makes zines. Or like... your friend who's starting an indie publishing company, or like a music producer that you met once. Like, it doesn't have to be big or loud, but as long as you are hearing yourself and you have someone else that listens to whatever you're trying to say and is like, yeah, even if I don't agree with you, like, I definitely heard and understood what you're saying. And that was good. Thanks for saying it.
I wonder, do you think about your audience as, like, do you think about who you write for?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, I write for mentally ill gay people. I am mentally ill. It affects my life almost, if not the same amount as queerness does in very different ways. I write my poetry and my books for queer people that do not feel as though there is a place where they can just be without having to explain themselves or, you know, my work is very much for a queer audience. I'm going to this summer camp this summer for people that write. And when I submitted my application, which was like a 50-page excerpt of one of my books, I was like, I don't think they're going to get it. So I added a page and I wrote in like, hey, this is for gay people. Like, you can read it and I hope you like it, but some of the parts and the content and like the jokes won't really make sense. Not your fault. Just keep that in mind. I think that's important that you don't have to write for everyone and your work doesn't necessarily have to be relatable. But I write for myself and I write for people I love or people that I think I might love. I write for people who I think are gonna enjoy my stuff.
And, you know, one possibility of that, too, is that other folks are going to read it and get some kind of understanding, even if they're not queer or
yes.
I mean, it seems so, it's almost like just a kind of horrific uptick in, like, media, news, laws, legislation.
It's terrifying. I fear for my life. Yeah.
Well, I mean, in a serious way, like, so many people trying to make decisions or writing about, like, you know, what about queer and especially trans youth, what they should and shouldn't be able to do, who should make decisions for them.
I find that terribly presumptuous.
I mean, from your, you know, from your perspective, what are you wishing people would understand about your own experience?
Okay.
Acknowledging you don't speak for,
I do not speak
for... You speak for yourself, right, obviously.
I don't speak for every gay person. I don't speak for every trans person. I definitely don't speak for every depressed person. But I think that the most important thing in almost every scenario is to like believe people when they tell you what's going on. There are so many studies and facts that say that trans people need to be respected. And even if there weren't those studies, it's human decency. I know that a lot of people tend to believe that they're non-acceptance of trans people is for the better of those trans people. And to those people, if you are still listening, I don't know why, but thank you. I just want to say thank you for the concern. But I guarantee gender can change. I think if it is a moral objection, what is morally wrong about someone seeking to be happy? Because the thing is, being trans brings a lot of pain, but the reason that we transition is to be happier. Not perfectly happy. It won't solve all of our problems. We know that. But it makes us happier. And to me, being trans isn't about how unhappy and how, you know, how terribly uncomfortable you are in your body before you transition. It's about how much happier and more comfortable you could be. Just be nice to people, I think is one of my main messages overall. Be nice.
You explore ideas in some of your poems about the future. Mm-hmm. And if queerness is kind of about disruption, but also like the possibility of otherwise worlds.
Yeah.
What's your queer dream for the future?
Everyone has lollipops and we all hold hands and sing Hayley Kiyoko. I don't know. I think that my queer dream for the future is that people get to be who they want to be. And it is often about want, not need. But, you know, sometimes want and need are the same. You know, you are very much allowed to be straight and cisgender and monogamous and completely, you know, and allosexual and all the other labels that you want, and that will be celebrated, and that will be fantastic. And with that, you cannot celebrate one without celebrating the other. And by the other, I mean being queer, which is not a monolith. I think that it is really an absurdly large community. By absurd, I just mean like very big. There are so many different labels and so many different subcultures within those labels. And that is a good thing, because that lets people who want it be like, hey, this is where I'm at. I think a queer dream for the future is a sustainable one that is not cruel to the earth and to people. And it is one where education and intellect and learning and books are not in danger, where languages are preserved and cultures are respected. And I think it is one where we value human safety over human profit.
As we wrap up our conversation tonight, anything else you want to leave listeners with or say that maybe we haven't gotten a chance to talk about?
Okay. I think I would say, like, if you are queer or if you are straight or whatever, and you think you might be wrong about whatever identity you are currently identifying with, that is something that literally every single person has ever thought. You know, it's okay, and it's okay to be wrong. It is important to let yourself just think and steep in your own doubt or your own confidence. And there are people that will value you. You matter to someone or something. And go read gay books, listen to gay music, talk to gay people, be gay, slay all day.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm Sean Kenny, and I've been chatting with Atlas, a Colorado high school student and poet. Atlas, thank you so much for joining me tonight and sharing your perspectives.
Thank you for having me. It was a joy.
For more Outsources content, including recordings of this and other episodes, go online to our website at news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. For tonight's episode, we'll also include links to other KGNU Media Gardens programming, which partners with a variety of youth organizations to empower youth voices and explore creative avenues. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about tonight's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org.